Blog Talk Radio.
Brought to you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to the Ooze.
I'm on the cage, every foul wicked spirit in the host, the Ooze.
20 minutes, Dead Gorilla Bay, on the Ooze, spread out.
On the Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
To really tap into adversarial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
Thanks for tuning in, boys and girls. I'm UC Downey, and with me on the air is Lehi. Lehi, how the hell are you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm not bad at all, man. Just got my second cup of coffee, so I'm not as crabby as I was when I first got up.
I hear you on that. I'm down in Sundrop to pick me up.
Right on. So, what's going on, man?
I've just been working a lot, mostly. I've been going through my brother's company's finances and also trying to work a couple other projects at the same time. You know, I kind of wish I had extra arms and so I could multitask it, but yeah, you can't always have what you want.
Right on. Well, extra arms wouldn't be a bad thing, but it's always good to have a lot of different projects going on. I got actually a project right now that I need my listener to help me with. So what I'm going to do, I've been working on a new intro, one that's going to be something to symbolize year three of the Ooze. So I got it down to two different versions of the background song, the background music. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to play it in the beginning of the show here. I'm going to play each of them. I'm going to play it in the middle of the show, right after a commercial break. And then at the end of the show, and hopefully, everybody will comment and chat, and those don't comment and chat and catch us in archive will, drop some kind of a vote on the front page of the Ooze, not on the show page, on the front page. Please go back to the front page and drop your vote there. And within, hopefully by the Tuesday Luminous edition, we have a new intro, so that's my goal at this point.
How many people have you got voting for it so far? I mean, I liked the original version versus the raw.
So far, everything is leaning towards the original version. So far, everybody liked that more. Though, what's interesting is Jason Sorrell, who his creative opinion I, really appreciate a lot. He initially jumped right at the raw, so that, again, kind of explains my own hesitance as to just picking one and why I'm taking this vote, because there's just something about that raw one that's cool, too. So I'm going to let the listeners and the co-hosts decide which one of these becomes the background of the new intro. With all that being said, what I'll do is the very first one that I'm going to play right now will be the original version. This way everybody knows, what everybody's voted for so far. And then we'll follow that up with the raw version.
Right on.
All right, so here we go. But that there is the original version. That's about 4 or 5 hours of my hard work behind Fruity Loop Studios. And here comes the rough version.
I mean to interrupt you, but those sound a lot different with my headphones on. But anyway, what were you saying?
Oh, I was going to ask which you your reasoning was for choosing the original version over the raw.
The reason why I like the original version is because you can hear more of that mystical sound to it. Like you got the mechanical, just industrial kind of sound in the background. But you got this mystical, gooey sound that kind of transcends it.
Oh, cool. So, again, the original version's your choice. So far, that's the winner. It's going to take a landslide on the other end to actually bring the raw up over the original. So we'll see how that works out. We got a phone call coming in, the 615 number. I'm going to go ahead and bring them on the air. I'm assuming it's Jeanette.
Hello,
Jeanette?
Guys.
Hey, what's going on?
Yeah, I was just over at
How's it going?
Good. I was over at the OOS site posting a blog.
Cool.
I was like, oh, crap, they're on.
Yep, we are on. I think you called in just a couple minutes too late to actually hear the two different intro versions.
Ah, crap. All right.
I'm going to be playing them again at the halfway mark and then again towards the end of the show. So
okay.
You will get your chance to do that. Are you, I guess, going to hang on a show?
Yeah. I want to hang out. I know y'all are doing Eastern Influences? That's the focus of the show, right?
Yep, Yoga Power.
All right.
Right, yeah, a book written by a guy named Julius Evola, and it really gives a good solid background to some, you know, claims that have been made in the past by Jason King, by Dan Dredd. This guy, he lived in the turn of the 20th century, well, actually was born sometime around the turn of the 20th century. And he lived up into the late 70s, almost the 80s, and he was scholars that have read his stuff are all like, this dude's on. He makes references to texts that are obscure. He makes references to things that you would only know if you had been studying in the occult for a long, long time. So really cool going through this book. This book is about actually about the left-hand path. So it's called Yoga Power. You can find it on the Mendez website. It's featured. So if you go to Mendez website and go to their library right there, it's one of the featured PDFs. You can download it. Only like 250 pages or something, but it's a dense 250 pages.
Yeah, and you might want to look up a lot of the words if you're not familiar with Eastern religion and philosophy. I mean, there's a lot of references to deities and other technical terms. So there's a lot of stuff I don't really understand right off the bat. I mean, you can get kind of the context of what they're talking about, but some of the things you got to look up if they don't define it in the book.
Right on. So
I think looking things up is necessary in cases like that or you get really lost. I do that. Like if I don't know a word, I'll always look the meaning of the entire paragraph was instantly.
Right on. So last we kind of just get overall, touch on what this book covered. This week we're going to begin a series of going hopefully a couple chapters at a time and just kind of discussing some of the things that are presented to you in the book. We're not going to necessarily do a verbatim reading, but we will be using the actual book as a kind of follow-along guide. In that sense, when you read the book, you'll actually have something to reference it to and, maybe absorb a little more of the information being offered. Originally, when we discussed doing the show, Lehi was supposed to take the first paragraph, but I'm not certain if he wants to do that or not.
Okay, so do you want me to... Obviously, we don't want to read directly from it. People should probably read it anyway, but we're going to start with the first chapter, and that basically goes back into the history of it. It's talking about when Christianity was still young, one thing I've got a question about is they mentioned Buddhism and Hinduism a lot, and since I haven't done a lot of research on these Eastern things, how related are Buddhism and Hinduism? I know that some people, they'll be said to be different religions, but since they're mentioned a lot side by side, it seems like one occurred within the other.
It is my understanding, and I can't really speak as an expert, but it is my understanding that Buddhism and Hinduism are branches of the same tree, but much like you might find in the Abrahamic traditions.
Oh, gotcha. So it starts with a history of... Hinduism and basically the Vedas, and it comes to and Tantrism itself, which is basically what this whole revolves around, or at least as far as the teachings go, is basically taking what was from the past and building upon that as a supplement. Although at the same time, it was putting it in the light of that the ways of the past. Or the other eras or ages or whatever. I guess the word is Yuga, because this age would be the Kali Yuga. The other ones, while there's still wisdom in the teachings, they're not really as important as they are now.
Right.
That's kind of the gist of it, so.
Right. Well, what he does here in the very beginning of this thing is he points to a period in time in Christian history where there was a particular philosophy that was born. And he doesn't really outline the philosophy's name in Western terms, but what he does is say, this is the starting point here for this idea and where it began. He says the first few centuries and most predominantly with the 5th century, this development happens. And he says that the development started here, and it spread. It spread to Hindus. It spread to Buddhism. And what this is it's way of the diamond, or the way of the thunderbolt. And this new current, as he calls it, which we all understand the concept of a current. This new current, he says, is designated as Tantra. And then what he does from there is he goes in to explain what Tantra really means. Now, this is something we can parallel directly with Jason King's work. Because Tantra in itself means to continue or to proceed, to keep going, that which has come down. So it is the next step. It is the next move.
It kind of sounds like a paradigm would be synonymous with that, like a paradigm shift, where you have a system beforehand that people try to use to explain things or whatever, and then something new happens, and they build upon the old while supplanting it at the same time.
Right, right. That's exactly what it is. It is a paradigm shift, and the way that he describes this paradigm shift, he calls it the beta. And now he goes into explaining that there are four Vedas. These four Vedas are referenced in four doctrines, the four ages, or yugas, as you called them, of the world. They're four specific types of thinking that have come up. And he references the, and I'm going to butcher the word. I know I am, but... Upanishadic texts, which are Hindu and Buddhist canon, if you understand it in that light.
Yeah, I have a problem with the vocabulary, too.
Yeah, well, it's just pronunciation for me. I recognize the words, and I understand what they're talking about, but being somebody who's deaf, I already have enough time being... precise with my English spoken English language, so trying to pronounce foreign words sometimes gets tricky.
Now, anyway, with the different Vedas, the fifth Veda, well, I was wondering, like, I thought from what I was gathering, the Kali Yuga, or the Dark Age, as he called it, was the fourth age. So what would I was kind of confused because I thought it was also a reference to the fifth age, or maybe that's just what tantrism is. So we got Kali Yuga, and then it moves to the tantric system.
Well, let me ask you something. Which edition of postmodern Satanism do you have?
I have the hard copy, although it's not with me right now. I left it at my apartment.
No. What I'm asking is, he released a deluxe edition, and this deluxe edition had both postmodern Satanism and the Five Books of Cain, the first book.
I don't have those.
All right. Well, then, inside of that, there's an essay written. It is Jason Sorrell's. Not Jason Sorrell, Jason King's breakdown or analysis of Aleister Crowley's Liber AL, which is an infamous kind of riddle. And, you know, King comes in, he breaks it down, and he says this is what Crowley's saying. And in that, one of the things that he points to is that Crowley's saying that he is opening the door to a new age, but he himself will not be able to walk through that door. So this is the same kind of concept that's happening here with the fifth Veda. And this is why the age of Kali Yuga is actually opening the door, but it cannot travel past it, into it.
Much in the same way that people are – well, there's a saying, for progress to be had, the old guard must die. Basically, when a paradigm shift happens, you'll have people that adhere to it in a dogmatic way, and they can't get past that, and it's up to the next generation to take up the next age. So I think what it was saying was Kali Yuga is the age we're in now, but we're at the height of it and about to move into a new thing.
No. We were at the height of it in the 1900s when he was writing this in 1949. We were at the height of it. And we were moving in. We are into fifth Veda now.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Cause I know he had written it a long time ago, but I wasn't sure if we were still technically in that modernistic society. Cause it still kind of seems that way, but maybe we're just in transition.
Right. Now, I don't actually have the breakdown of all the ages in front of me, but I know that it starts with, like, a golden age, and the last age is the Kali Yuga, and then which is the Dark Age. And this age, well, for in our study, we're actually going to talk about what age, but he kind of compares it to a tantric age, but you'll see what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm trying to gather from that is the tantric age, rather than, it doesn't take on, well, I guess you could say it's Shakti.
Yes, that's precisely it. It's an age of action. The Kali Yuga, it also refers to as being the Iron Age, the Age of the Wolf. It's the brink of a new thing, but it itself cannot be the new thing, if that makes sense. Wolves, you know, they travel in the packs. They're loosely cabaled. But they, you know, they don't have a real dogmatic structure, at least not like you might compare to an anthill or a colony of bees, you know, that kind of thing isn't there. But anyway, they still have their dogmas and so forth, but they're not pure and free yet. And this is something that... is definitely on Uvola's mind as we go further into this text, is the idea of being free. So I'm trying to think of where we are here in this right here.
I'm at the part above the quote, the first quote about the womanly thing to establish purity part.
Why don't you go ahead and just read the quote?
Oh, the quote? Okay. It is a womanly thing to establish superiority through convincing arguments. It is a manly thing to conquer the world through one's power. Reasoning, argument, inference may be the work of other schools, shastras, but the work of the tantra is to accomplish superhuman and divine events through the force of their own words of power. Oh, there's another quote, but I'm not going to read that one. It's a little bit longer. But the paragraph above that ties into that. Basically, that in this last age... there was, like, I guess with a philosophy, people just, you know, mentally masturbate. It's just thinking, oh, well, I could do this, I could do that. But now we're coming to this point where the rubber has hit the road. And not in a scientific way either, where, like, technological, because that's so impersonal. But when it comes down to our being, we really have to go out there and do something.
Right, right. When it comes to manifesting your own... own will, your own destiny. This is now, it's no longer, what he's saying here is that it's no longer, you know, we're not confined to these gender-specific roles anymore. We're not confined to behaving womanly or behaving manly. And that's why he makes the reference in the beginning that it is a womanly thing. And then he says it is a manly thing. And then he goes into saying that the work of the tantra is superhuman. And now, as I've come to understand the idea of superhuman being, it is a being that is able to exist in a superposition most of the time, that you can have a very physical, material outlook and at the same time a very inspired, enlightened inlook.
Basically, a synthesis of the two genders.
I mean, it's old thinking, and this is one thing that kind of, I don't know, reinforces what we were just talking about with the fact that he was at the height of the Kali Yuga, so he was confined to that dogma still. You see, what... You know, Kali in specific is feminine in origin. We know this. But the age before that that he references, the first age, the golden age, the age of Hasad, that was a very masculine age. So this next age is beyond that. This next age, it's a very childlike age.
Basically a new beginning. I was wondering about something, though. It was mentioned later in the book. I know I'm kind of getting ahead. But he was talking about how in previous ages, the gods and goddesses of the Hindu pantheon were more autonomous. But now at this age, they're really a part of each other.
That's precisely the point of what we're getting to with calling this the childlike age. Because what is a child? That child is a part of his mother and a part of his father.
Oh, that's very true in a physical sense as well as spiritual.
Right. So, again, it's about holding that superposition. It is about holding that understanding that things happen on different levels, things happen on different layers. Jason King made a brilliant 40-minute video, and goddamn, I've got to get off his nuts today. He made a brilliant 40-minute video on YouTube last week, and it's filled with a ton of crap that you have to get through. But he even said, I'm putting this crap in here on purpose. So he's moving towards the guru. You know, gurus tend to sprinkle tons of shit between little nuggets of wisdom. So
you're basically forcing you to actually do the work yourself.
Right. And that's not a bad thing. It's just, you know, in this day and age, and understanding what the actual current of it is, it's more about an instant gratification for most folks, and there are very few that are going to be willing to put the work in on anything. I'm saying that's right. What I'm saying is the hell it is. So anyway, the 40-minute video that he made, he talks a bunch about this, about fractal existence. If you could take everything in the world and put it on a three-dimensional graph plane, you would see scales happening. Everything from the atom to the galaxy would be scaled in these different cubic measurements. That's very much how things are. They exist on every level, but because the dimensions have changed, the sizing has changed, they can look very much different. So he is portraying the very same thing that we're kind of talking about.
Going up different layers.
Well, everything has to be held in superposition. Everything has to be understood that what occurs on one level also occurs on other levels. So when you begin to look at things, you begin to recognize their actual mechanical function. And this is the mark of a magician. The magician knows what functions to look for, and that's why they always seem gifted.
He actually did a video on magic, what it really is, and it's not because everything that we can see has a causal connection to everything else, but the key to magic is seeing the different connections that you can go into. It's kind of hard to explain, but you can see what how everything connects, and you can choose which way to go for your own ends, rather than just reacting.
Right. Well, here's a perfect example. If you take a small engine, all right, let's say a 49cc motorcycle, and then you take a big engine, like a Dodge Viper engine, a 10-cylinder monstrous engine, you will find certain functions and movements that are the same. It's built up off of the same principles. You must have, you must have air, you must have fuel, you must have good compression. These rules are constants throughout. As it gets more complex, there's other things that you begin to have. In a 150cc motor, you don't have to have a water-cooled system. The engine doesn't run hard enough for that to be the case. Air cooling is fine. But in a 10-cylinder motor, you have to have a water-cooled system. Otherwise, the engine will just burn right the fuck up. So you see, as it gets more complex, you have to add more rules. It's actually interesting because one of the things that I have noted is what we have is kind of a bottom up vantage here going, meaning that we have the most complex set of rules here at the base, at the very bottom of this set of layers. And at the very top of this set of layers, there are few, and a lot of Eastern mystics taught this. Gurdjieff came back, and the way Gurdjieff described each of these cosmos is each of these layers. Every time you moved up a layer, the number of restrictions was removed by half.
Interesting.
I like that.
So that's something that's, it's very true. The larger scale that you look at, the more simple it becomes. So now, where are we in this whole thing? Because I got on a little bit of a rant going.
Yeah. Let's see. There was an analogy that I wanted to bring up. Actually, I'm going to read this part because it was interesting. It said, "Thus, tantras often employ an analogy taken from medicine. The efficacy of a doctrine, like a drug, is proved." Oh, wait, that's not what I wanted to find. I was going to talk about the other ages.
I'll give you a minute to find it. And then in the meantime, I'm going to kind of say we're at the halfway point here. So I'm going to run the commercial. And then immediately after, we're going to go into the two potentials for the new Ooze outro. So everybody stay put, and we'll be back in a minute with more of the Yoga of Power.
Creative Oddities Studios.
Creative Oddities Studios. Stickers, T-shirts, skateboard decks, lighters, prints, posters, and many other fine pieces of merchandise.
It's some of the best damn artwork you'll find on the internet.
The creative assault and meandering of Jason Sorrell, T.C. Downey, and Vanessa Lee.
Coleman! What is best in life?
To crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and to visit Creative Oddities Studios.
Bondage art, digital manipulation, erotica, demon girls, fantasy, tattoo art, horror, occult, and we dare to call it artwork.
It's my candy, but for your eyes!
Check out our very popular books on the occult and Satanism, now available in hard copy and downloadable format.
Hoo-wah!
Check out our blogs on art, tattoo work, what life is like as a tattoo artist, social issues, philosophy, lowbrow culture in Austin, Texas, and eminentmind.info. You'll enjoy them.
If you can read!
Creative Oddities Studios. www.creativeoddities.com.
I like the naked girls.
Creative Oddities Studios.
All right, that was the new Creative Oddities Studios commercial, designed, orchestrated, and executed by the creative juggernaut Jason Sorrell. Now, this next portion, there are two possibilities for the music, the new Ooze outro. Again, I'm going to play these both in just a minute. If you're not on live and can't cast your vote in the chat room, please do so on the front page of the Ooze site, not here on the show page. All right, so here we go. This is the original version.
Thank you.
All right, that's the original version. That's the one that's winning right now. This is the Raw version. Favorite of those two?
I actually like the second one better, so I'm going to go ahead and, like, you know, completely, you know, go against what everybody else said. I like the second one better.
Okay, you like the second one better, so that one's noted. All right. Getting back into topic here, Lehi, I don't know if you found your quote yet, but there is something I wanted to discuss that I think has to be enclosed in this episode in order to continue to develop the way that the book does, is, and I'm going to read this verbatim because it'll just make more sense this way, it's connection, but it goes like this. During Kali Yoga, however, the goddess Kali, who was asleep in the previous ages, is now fully awake. I will write at greater length about Kali, a prominent Indic goddess, in the following pages. For now, let us say that this symbolism implies that during the last age, elementary, infernal, and even abyssal forces are untrammeled. The immediate task consists in facing and absorbing these forces, in taking the risk of riding the tiger, to use a Chinese expression that may best describe this situation. And I'm going to cut it right there.
That's where my quote is.
Oh, it was? Excellent, excellent. So
to transform the poison into medicine.
Right. So, yeah, and you know what? That's probably something that should be included in that, is that the next part of it does say, that... you know, to transform the poisons into medicine. So this is to say that we've explored all of these wonderful ideological egalitarian notions throughout history. And now we are at a point where all of the things that we have demonized, all of the things that we have been programmed to believe are bad for us are now things that we may reach inside, experiment with, go after, and truly learn ourselves this way. So as you can see, what we have developing here, and this is in 1949, is the very same current that in the 60s, LeVay will put his finger on and say, that is what this is.
Yep, and I think where people get hung up, though, is the different form it takes. I mean, with LeVay, he was just reacting to the society he lived in, whereas when the tantric system actually came out in Hindu culture, their practices were more based on their culture.
That's true. It was based on their culture, but it was also, and we'll get into that as we go further through here, it in itself was also an act against what was currently going on in their culture.
Exactly. So in either sense, even though the form is different, the essence is the same.
The essence is, in fact, exactly the same. This goes to show, and I don't know if we skipped over it, but somewhere in this first chapter, he says that people had this thing in the beginning and they forgot it for a while. And then they're just now coming back to it.
Oh, yeah. I was mentioning how it was these kind of things were practiced before, but then it had to go underground because of developments around them. Probably having something to do with maybe Christianity. I don't remember exactly what he was saying caused them to go underground. Maybe it was the class system.
Right.
I'm not quite sure.
So let's see. Real quick, I mentioned King's video. I want to also mention Dan Dredd's most recent blog. What is it? It's autodiabolic.wordpress.com.
I think
yep.
so.
You can go right to the Ooze resource page, which is oozeradio.wordpressblog.com or wordpress.com, whatever. And in the link section, it's there. You can click that, or you can go to eminentmind.info. It's there. You can click it there. There are links to
it's
it.
It's on mine.
And it's on
mine too. Yeah.
Right. But he does a really bang up job describing this stuff. It's unfortunate that every time it's introduced or reintroduced, it's almost like it's a new thing again for people. When it's something that obviously has been established for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's okay. It's not for everyone. It is esoteric, after all.
Yes, it is. All right. So what's the next thing? Oh, we need to get into the point that he starts talking about liberation and freedom. And he starts making comparison to democracy. I'm trying to think of where a good quote in here is to kind of illustrate that whole bit so we can talk on it. Again, what we're kind of doing is a book study here. So, you know, there's not a lot of notes here. I'm not trying to take the role of teacher or anything like that. I'm studying this with you guys, too. So,
of course.
Right, so here we go. Wow. All right, I'll go right here. A third point must be emphasized. In Tantraism, the passage from the ideal of liberation to that of freedom marks an essential change in the ideals and ethics of Hinduism. It is true that even previously the idea of Jivan Muktata had been known. The word means one who is freed. That is, the one who has achieved unconditioned sahaja while alive in his own body. Now, sahaja is typically achieved after death. But this is in the afterlife to this life, or bringing the next level to this level, and that is specifically what the tantric practice is about.
Yeah, and it goes on to specify that that's still true, but they want to take it to the next level, like overcoming, I guess it was saying, the existential condition of mankind in the last age.
Right, well, that whole thing, there's a couple of quotes that I can think of, and I can't think of who's them, but one of them is that all things are measured by man. That's the first quote that's very relative to what we're talking about. And the next thing is that the only thing standing in the way of man is it's humanity.
Oh, yeah, that was a quote from Nietzsche, or however the hell you say his name. And I remember later in the book, he brings up that quote and says that Tantraism takes that idea more seriously than maybe Nietzsche did.
Right. Now, here's something else that he begins to offer in the first chapter. He begins to talk about the idea of Maya, I believe it's Maya.
Mm-hmm.
And what Maya is this idea that there is this absolute And this, because there is this absolute, everything contained within it cannot be correct like the absolute. It cannot be the right thing. So therefore, it has to be illusionary or like a mirage. It's you know, the idea that reality is completely subjective. That you know, you imagine all of this stuff. Everything that you're seeing is in fact some kind of holographic universe. And while we've got a moment here, I'm going to go ahead and plug a book, P.D. Ospensky, which is called A New Model of the Universe, which he actually tackles the subject himself with some brilliance. So that there's another book that we may in the future touch on here on this particular episode. So where are we? All right,
Maya.
Now, the thing about this, and he offers a very simple argument for why this can't be the right method, the right way of looking at things, because if everything is imagined, if everything is unreal or pretend, then how can anything really be done? That is the argument that he offers, and it destroys subjective Descartesism.
Right, because if it's an illusion, then our view of it as an illusion is also an illusion, which kind of defeats the whole point.
Exactly. So there has to be something tangible, real, and that's what he's pointing to.
Yeah, I remember later in the book, I hear I'm jumping ahead again, he was comparing the idea of our view of the world as Maya versus the world as it really is being, I think it was Brahman?
Brahma.
Oh, Brahma. Okay, Brahman. I thought Brahma was the god and Brahman was the acausal existence of the universe.
You may be correct. I'm known to butcher shit, so.
Well, it's kind of confusing because there's like one letter difference between the two.
Right. I'm looking right now to get the correct thing, but I believe that Brahma is actually correct and that Brahma is the god. So you were right.
Okay. And so if it's not, so anyway, back to Maya, if it's not an illusion per se, then what is it? And I think he was bringing up its energy or power, Shakti.
Which, that's actually a very, very solid point. What makes it not an illusion? What is it that's not the illusion? That's where this whole thing's going, and that's exactly what it is. It is the action. It is the praxis. That is the not-doing. The Shakti is the non-illusional thing. Everything else is illusion. And this is why he gives the dichotomy of philosophy and action. Why he makes the example of the gun, and the gun's very real in a sense, but its effectiveness it varies depending on who's holding it. He makes the argument, and I forget, we talked about this last episode, but he makes the argument that and anybody can pick up the gun and shoot it, but that doesn't, make any difference. That doesn't actually display the difference between the idiot who just picked up the gun and the master pistol smith.
Yeah. He was drawing a comparison between different kinds of people who use a gun, whether they're insane or brilliant or whatever. The action of the gun is already conditioned. It's very impersonal, and it's going to do what it's going to do no matter what, because that's just the nature of it. And that was because he was trying to draw a distinction, because the idea of power has been misused in a sense. We, in the technological age, we think of power as what we can do with our technology and our science. But those aspects of a reality are unchangeable. They're just the way they are. They don't think or feel or anything. And it really comes down to personal power or Shakti, which is internal. And so that's what differentiates the different kinds of people using the gun, as we were using that example.
Excellent. I'm looking because we've got just about 9 minutes left, and I still want to run those new intros again one more time. So we're almost to the end of the chapter in terms of ideas. You actually, by skipping ahead, have helped to keep this first chapter in here on time here on the ooze. So.
I just figured it would help the flow of conversation. It's kind of hard to be going over the book and playing off each other.
Yeah, no, you did a good job, man. It kept us on course and within our time restraints. So
very good.
Let's see what we got going on here. To be honest with you, I don't think we're going to be able to get the rest of the ideas into here. So we'll just pick up. With the idea that the reality is the action and all the rest of it is illusionary, which is kind of an inversion of what most people think of it to be. Most people think of the material around them as being what's real and the action itself as being illusionary, but the material wouldn't take shape the way that it does. It wouldn't become solid and hard like it is. That this phone that I'm holding in my hand right here would not have been made had action not happened, had that Shakti not been allowed to take its course. So,
you know, what's kind of interesting about that is if you think about things on like a chemical atomic level, our interaction with physical objects. If I'm touching a tree or a wall, I'm not actually touching it. It's the energy in me. Reacting with the energy in the wall. I mean, because everything has, everything is energy, a positive and negative charge. And so the reason why your hand doesn't go through the wall just by touching it is because of that, the opposing forces.
Right. So what it's showing us is exactly what I'm talking about, that it is in fact the things that we consider to be material and very real. That are illusionary and constructed. And by illusionary, most people think when you hear the term illusionary that we're talking about something that's imagined or pretended upon. But it's not necessarily that. They are things that are constructed or built from imagination, from idea.
Yeah, the way our brains process it.
Right.
I think this whole concept has a really nice, I think it dovetails really nice into Goethe's concept of doing, or, the way that Satanism as a praxis gets tossed around, the differences between thinking it and actually doing it, and how that kind of affects your reality if you do something as opposed to just think about it. I think it's a really nice dovetail into those other concepts.
Absolutely, and it's kind of interesting that the overall philosophical, at least in terms of esoteric and occult things here on the ooze, is tailored that way as well. So,
mm-hmm.
Right.
And
go ahead, Leah.
I would say if you really think about it too, we don't live in a vacuum at all. Like when you think about interactions with other things. And our worlds or our lives, we're surrounded by energy. Just the air around us is energized particles like everything else. So what am I trying to say is
you're saying
we can
everything
see,
is alive.
Everything is connected. Like
and
in a literal sense, like everything is connected. So the magus can see the connections and he can choose between the different causal connections to create change.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And that brings us full circle back to what we were talking about in the very beginning of this show, and a very nice tie-out. We're going to go ahead one more time, do the intros again, and just like I promised, and then from there we'll say our goodbyes. So let me go with the original once again.
We'll be right back.
one last time the Raw. Main page of the Ooze here, and excellent. Next week, guys, we're going to have to pick up where we left off here on the Power of Yoga. I assume that this is going to be something that probably takes us well into next year before we're done examining this, and in the meantime, hopefully we'll all have grown quite a bit from it.
Sounds great.
Right on. Jeanette, thank you very much for joining us today. She's dealing with the kids. That's understandable there. But
I said no, thank you. I enjoyed listening to y'all. I think that this is a really good idea. I love the idea of going for that book too. I hadn't even heard of it until I popped over to Mindy's at Scholastic when y'all started talking about it, so I popped over to Mindy's and started reading it.
Right, yeah, no, it is definitely an underappreciated text, and what is interesting about it is that it has so much information that is all relative to the history of what it is that we practice now, so very, very cool read. And hopefully everybody that listens to this show goes and downloads that sucker. And after they've read it and realize how awesome it is, they go out and buy that book.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, yeah. I'd certainly say, too, that especially with you know, what we do, I mean, a lot of times it's best to go back to the beginning to kind of see what exactly it is. Because, you know, so many people argue about substance over form, but if you don't know what the roots are, you're going to have a hard time, I think, understanding the difference between those two things.
Right on. So on that note, we're going to go ahead and roll the outro, and everybody join us tomorrow night for the Outbreak Edition, 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Have a good day, guys.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening to the Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but it's the old expression goes. I want special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is the Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?